This podcast is brought to you by IBM. For your most important business-critical applications, IBM offers software development tools and support based on open standards. To learn more, go to ibm.com/takebackcontrol/open.
Mainframe computing. A lot of people associate that term with the old days of the computer industry. Mainframes are the data processing workhorses, often running the business-critical applications that are the lifeblood of corporate operations. But mainframes do have a legacy, and the billions of lines of code that have been written for them over the many years are sometimes considered as much a problem as they are an asset. IBM has some different ideas about this mainframe legacy. That company believes that there's still plenty of value in those rock-solid applications, and that the mainframe can play a critical role in the data center of the future. The challenge is to modernize, not marginalize, and IBM has strategies, products, and services to help businesses get many more years of life out of their data processing investments. Hi, I'm Paul Gillen. Welcome to this IBM Innovations podcast on enterprise modernization. My guest is Hayden Lindsay. He's Vice President of Enterprise Tools and Compilers at IBM. Hayden works closely with customers on modernization projects. It's a process that involves taking an inventory of their IT assets, identifying inefficiencies in old code, and bringing those assets into the modern world with a set of tools and languages that are based on industry standards. In his view, the mainframe is simply another component in the evolving world of service-oriented architecture, and a very critical one at that. Well, Hayden, let's start by defining some terms. What exactly do you mean by enterprise modernization?
Well, there are many definitions out there in the industry, but ours is actually pretty simple. The goal for most IT organizations out there is that they need to be more flexible in order to support the flexibility that the business is being asked to do. So most companies and most IT organizations want to go about doing this modernization and do so in the most sensible fashion possible. And so when you look at companies that have been investing in their own software development for several decades, sometimes three or four decades, these companies have a tremendous amount of enterprise assets, many of which are running on mainframes, that are running the business at the moment. So our focus around enterprise modernization is helping these companies gain the flexibility that they need in IT by leveraging the assets that exist, by leveraging the people that they already have that understand the business, and by allowing them to grow and bring in new people, bring in new workload to the mainframe as it exists in the context of multi-platform environment that most of our customers are operating in.
And what are some of the key aspects of enterprise modernization?
We have broken this down into five primary areas, and we call them the dimensions of enterprise modernization. The first is around getting flexibility with the assets that the company already has. So the source code, the test cases, and so forth that are being used that run the business today. So most companies do not have a very good way of managing their software assets. The second is around the architecture of those software assets, so how the pieces of code were actually put together. Those two have to deal with the things, the programs, and so forth. The third dimension is around the skills and the flexibility of the skills in the organization. So we want to help people have way more flexibility in moving people from project to project. The fourth is around the processes and team infrastructure that's being used within the organization. And then the final dimension of enterprise modernization is really one that is an overlay across the other four, and it's for people who are really coming at this problem thinking that they just don't have budget to do what they need to do. And so we try to help them get better budgetary flexibility in their organization.
And which areas should customers expect the biggest gain from modernization?
What we generally try to understand when working with customers is what is their biggest pain. So we generally try to lay out these five areas and understand what their pain points are, and then based upon the problem that they're seeing, then we will recommend an asset inventory because it looks like you're having issues with managing change and you're actually putting errors out into production. Or if it's with being able to staff new people to work on an enterprise project because they're having retirements in the organization, we'll go down the people flexibility dimension. So all of this is about getting more flexibility in IT so that they can respond to what the business is asking them to do, so they can deliver more modern solutions, so they can leverage advances in hardware, such as the new Z10 hardware that's coming out, and so they can recruit new talent. So you can't expect someone to hire in a kid from the university and then ask them to use a green screen editor like ISPF and learn about DL1 and IMS. That's just not an attractive thing. You need to teach them new, give them new tools, and give them new problems to work on.
So maybe you can describe how someone goes about the process of deciding what to modernize and in what priority.
It's really about what is the biggest pain point. So if customers are finding that they are putting errors into production, and or it's taking them way too long to plan for upcoming change because they don't have electronic information, electronic metadata about their systems, then we will suggest that they put in an enterprise asset management solution. And so that's where we would start. We'd start on the asset modernization angle. If it's a staffing issues, they're trying to do some new J2E development, and they only have HIX COBOL programmers, or they're trying to replenish their people who are building systems for CICS, then we'll talk about our skills modernization solutions, things that actually raise the level of abstraction so that developers can be business developers and work across platforms, across technologies. If it's a disconnect between the enterprise developers and the distributed developers, something we call the islands of development, we suggest that you look at our modernization stories there, which actually help consolidate the development environments. And if it's cost that's the biggest problem, then we'll try to figure out which one of our productivity and modern IDEs and modern tools would actually give the biggest productivity benefit so that you can free up resources to work on new things rather than spending, you know, what the industry says is 80 to 85% of the IT resources are spent solely on maintenance these days.
The process often starts, I understand, with a complete asset inventory. Now, what's included in that inventory, and how do you develop that?
If the customer has chosen to go down the path of starting with an asset modernization solution, there's sort of two ways you can do it. One is to create a complete enterprise-wide asset inventory, and we have a product called Webster Studio Asset Analyzer that helps you do that. In that case, you need to find all the assets, all the source code for the systems that are in production or that are being developed for future production use. So this means all the COBOL code, the PL1 code, the DDL, the Java, the C++, the JSPs, everything. Find all that code and then load it into the system, load it into the WSAA, and then resolve any issues that you might find, such as things have been duplicated or what have you. And then as soon as you have this enterprise-wide inventory, you can start gaining benefit from the system. You can do enterprise-wide impact analysis. You can get graphical views of code flow that helps people quickly understand how systems are put together. That's the enterprise angle. Another way to get started in the asset space is to use something called Rational Transformation Workbench, where instead of trying to solve the problem for the enterprise as a whole, you instead get started working on a more of a project scope, and you decide, okay, I want to modernize this system. And it's not my entire set of systems in my whole enterprise, it's just a particular set of systems. And in that case, you do the same process that I just described, but it's, you know, you're maybe working with 500,000 lines of code or 1 million rather than 50 million, and so you can get a much quicker return on investment. Now, you're not able to do your enterprise-wide analysis yet, but for that individual product, you can get tremendous value. So in that case, that's really how we suggest people to get started and then maybe move on to the enterprise-wide solution after they've proven to themselves that this is valuable to them.
Now, we know that organizations often have a lot of dead or unused code or licenses that are no longer used. What are some of the more common surprises that you uncover during the asset inventory process?
The industry says that there's about 15 to 20% of the code that's theoretically in production is actually dead code that has no business being in production, and it's code that you don't want to keep paying your developers to maintain. If you're choosing to outsource, you certainly don't want to be paying an outsource firm to maintain that 15 to 20% of the code that's not reachable. So discovering the dead code certainly is one of the things that companies discover and sometimes are quite surprised by. One of the most amazing is that they realize they don't have all their code. So they try to load up the system, And the system, by being able to follow dependency graphs, discovers that code is missing. Or maybe the client knows they have a system in production and they can't ever discover the source, so they figure it out. But they wouldn't have figured that out until they go through this exercise. Finding that they have missing code is a big surprise, and of course something that you want to be doing that proactively in an exercise such as this, rather than discovering that you don't have it when there's a defect that's taking your system down. People find duplicate code. They find they're surprised by how much code has been cloned and made small changes to and being used across the enterprise. They find out that no one left in the organization knows anything about code, and so therefore having some tools that help with understanding and teaching new people about it is quite critical.
Now, does modernization generally require replacing a lot of old code, writing new code, or can you preserve those investments?
Well, you can certainly preserve your investments. In fact, that's where we generally recommend people consider starting. So 200 billion lines of COBOL that the industry says are out there. This is what's running people's businesses, COBOL, PO1, of course, Java and RPG and C and so forth. But when you look at the mainframe space, it's predominantly COBOL and PO1. And so if there are systems that are working today that you are satisfied with the quality of service, it's doing what it needs to do, and yet you want to expand the reach, maybe you want to put on a nice new web user interface onto that system that was previously a back office green screen system, you're going to be able to do that much, much more quickly by leveraging what you have already and just creating some small amount of new code. So we have many solutions that focus on allowing you to leverage what exists as you're creating something new. And I think the analyst studies have shown that create a new system, if you're able to get some substantial degrees of reuse, you can create those new systems in one-fifth the amount of time you can from building from scratch. The most extreme case is you can take an existing 3270-based mainframe system, and with some of our modern screen scraping technology, something called Host Access Transformation Services, create very modern web user interfaces from those systems. It's not going to be the old 10-year-ago screen scraping web UI that looked just like a 3270. It's totally modern, uses style sheets. And in that case, in a matter of hours, you can have a brand new web system from an existing system. And of course, that is the highest degree of reuse and the least amount of new code. On the other end of the spectrum, we have solutions that help you write brand new systems designed for WebSphere on Z or deploying to CICS or IMS, but with modern IDEs and new modern business language. So that we cover the whole spectrum. And, most companies would like to reuse as much as they possibly can.
Now, Hayden, IBM has been, of course, a major proponent of service-oriented architecture. How well-suited do you find these enterprise legacy applications are to being re-architected for SOA?
Of course, the answer to that is it depends. But some that were designed in a reasonably modular fashion are quite well suited for use in an SOA with little amount of change, little to no change. And so, in fact, again, using something like HATS, you can actually script together a number of green screen systems, and instead of exposing that system as a bunch of web pages, you can expose it as web services. So, again, that's sort of the one extreme where the application that you had been using that was green screen is actually what you would want to expose as a web service. And that's not always going to be the case, of course. So that's on one end of the spectrum. As you look at systems that are, let's say, built in a bit more, totally monolithic, and they're not really what you want to expose as a web service and not what you would want to use in a new modern SOA architecture, you have to start making some changes. However, in general, making changes to the existing COBOL system or PL1 system or what have you is still way more efficient than starting over from scratch. So we have facilities, one of them that we introduced with CICS 3.1 and also that's in our Rational Developer for Z product called the Service Flow Modeler. It allows you to basically wire together Kix transactions just like you're wiring together a BPEL flow, Business Process Execution Language flow. But instead of using a process server to drive the activities, you actually use CICS to do that. So it's a way of doing SOA-style wiring, activity wiring, and yet doing it in the context of a deployed CICS system. When you get to systems that you say, well, I need to do a lot of new stuff in order to support this SOA architecture and my whole modernization solution, we even have a high-level business language called EGL that is our newest business language for System Z and for System I and for multi-platform. And in the language, we have service as a keyword. So we're reinforcing this notion of SOA even down to the developer. Okay, because SOA is not just the domain of the architects. If you're going to do an SOA that actually adheres to what the architect wanted, you better make sure you implement it correctly. So we have service built into the language in EGL that we can then deploy to CICS, we can deploy it to IMS, we can deploy it to a J2E application server, and if you choose, expose those systems as web services. But the key is that you've architected the system and then implemented as a set of communicating services. Whether you choose to expose them as web services or not is your choice. So again, we have a broad spectrum of things that support, you know, the SOA lifecycle. And of course, we have ability to, you know, create web service wrappers from any code that exists, COBOL, PL1, RPG, EGL, what have you, and of course, Java.
Now, you're talking about some new languages here, and I would think there'd be skill requirements attached to that. Does this involve hiring a lot of new developers and bringing in lots of new tools and languages?
Yes and no. So the yes part of the answer in the tools arena is we absolutely recommend to our clients to get off of green screen editors. Get off of ISPF if you're doing development for Z. Get off of PDM if you're doing development for System I. Move into the 21st century. Let's use some modern IDEs, and we have a very nice set of these IDEs. They're all Eclipse-based. We have Rational Developer for Z, which is our premier COBOL and PL1 and assembler IDE, as well as having support for J2E and web services and so forth. We have Rational Business Developer, which is the IDE that provides the additional support for EGL, which is our new high-level business language. So in that case, we absolutely recommend that you bring in some new tools. Now, on the people front, it's more of a yes and no answer. We definitely have solutions, such as Rational Developer for Z, that can be used by the existing staff that have been using ISPF before, and we have many, many customers that have been successful in making this transition. So what they're able to do is leverage the people that understand the business, that previously, you know, could only do COBOL development with ISPF, that can now use a modern, you know, Eclipse-based IDE to do that. And, of course, the phenomenon that more and more companies are finding themselves facing is that some of those people are retiring. And so, therefore, you must bring in new people to supplement the people that are retiring. And so in that case, you know, new hires, you want to be able to give them an appealing modern IDE, and in the case of using EGL, a modern multi-platform development language. This makes joining these types of projects way more interesting for these people that might be out of university than if you ask them to go use a green screen editor. And so therefore, you know, sometimes even a new language makes sense, but you're not going to stop using COBOL, you're not going to stop using PL1. It's just when you want to do some substantial new development where we would recommend using our new modern language as sort of the new way of doing substantial development. For maintenance of your existing COBOL and PL1, you continue to use those. So it's very much a yes-no, but the one that's an absolute yes is we really recommend our customers get off of green screen editors. It's time to move on.
When you do need to modernize skills, how does IBM help in that respect?
We've been working with our clients for 3 or 4 decades of doing, and probably more than that, doing software development for businesses, you know, for helping them write the applications that run their business. And what we've observed in these many decades is that there are some typical patterns that we see that exist over and over again when building business apps. And 30, 40 years ago, we introduced COBOL and PL1 and RPG for the System I crowd into the market. But in those 30 to 40 years, we've observed some additional things, and things like service-oriented architecture have come about. Web UIs have come about, and of course, now everybody's interested in having, you know, Web 2.0 style user interfaces. So many advances have occurred, and so what we have done is introduce a new business language called EGL. EGL is about hiding the middleware and technical complexities that get in the way of writing business apps. There are certain concepts, like the notion of a transaction, that are similar whether you're dealing with CICS or IMS or DB2 or a J2E application server. You just need to know that I want to either commit or roll back that transaction. You don't need to know, to be an effective business developer, exactly how to do it on CICS or IMS if you have a higher level platform-independent way of specifying that. So that's what we've captured in our new language, EGL, to help companies get this people flexibility. Because a lot of what we've previously talked about is around code flexibility and code management flexibility. This is around getting flexibility with people so that you can have them work on the project that's most important to the business at any particular point in time. And whether that project needs to deploy to CICS or to a J2E application server such as WebSphere or to ZOS Batch, you do so based on the availability of people who understand the business, not based on whether or not they happen to know Kix or IMS or J2E. That's what we're doing to help get people more modern, more flexible on the skills dimension is with this new business language.
Many companies have islands of IT development. Do you address that issue in the context of modernization?
Absolutely. I've been out talking with several hundred customers in the last couple of years, and invariably there is this phenomenon where the distributed development crowd is using one set of team infrastructure and processes, and the enterprise developers, and in particular, say, the mainframe developers, are using something totally different. This phenomenon occurred, or it started occurring, let's say 20 years ago, when we were building the first instances of the departmental applications that were going to run on that newfangled machine called a PC. And then that was sort of a forking of the development environment. The mainstream development was still done by the core IT group, and they were doing deployments to mainframes or to mid-range computers. But what happened is then the client-server era occurred, and more people started doing this distributed-based development. And then, of course, the web phenomenon occurred. And what has happened when you now look back 20 years later is the vast majority of the innovation that occurred in the industry has been in the processes, IDEs, and team infrastructure that supports building software on distributed platforms. And in that same two decades, there have been very few advances in how ISPF supports helping write COBOL. You can think about this in terms of open source software. When you fork the code, it may make sense to do so to go off and explore some new angle. But if you discover that what you have been working on in this forked body of code is beneficial and will benefit everyone, you need to now remerge it. We forked off for the distributed developers, and now we need to merge back what used to be mainstream and now is, you know, the isolated enterprise developers. We need to move them back to a consolidated set of IDEs, a consolidated set of source code management systems, a consolidated set of problem tracking systems, build, and so forth. This is something that we were talking about it 2 years ago, and where people would nod their heads and said, yeah, but that's going to be really hard to do. In the last 6 to 9 months, we've seen many customers start making this move because they realize it limits their ability to move people around by having totally different infrastructure, but it's also more costly to have duplicate infrastructure, and their code quality suffers because most companies are building multi-platform solutions that require pieces from the mainframe as well as from distributed. So consolidating the infrastructure is a way to improve the quality as well as these other benefits.
And typically, how long do you find it takes customers to see a full payback on their investment in modernization?
It can be anything from days to months or years. Some of the very fastest ones are things like the host access transformation services that can take existing green screen systems and create web UIs or web services from them. As I mentioned in the asset discussion, Rational Transformation Workbench will give you much faster return on investment than something like a Web3 Studio Asset Analyzer, which is going to primarily give you the biggest value when you have done an enterprise-wide inventory. Well, that's just going to take longer to do. And, of course, our modern IDEs, Rational Developer for Z and Rational Business Developer, are going to give you payback, again, in a matter of days to weeks, because the things that the distributed developers have taken for granted, like code assist and code coloring and highlighting and these types of things, are there being used by the COBOL developers on day one. Some other things take longer, such as changing out the team infrastructure. If you're presently using Endeavor or ChangeMan for source management on the mainframe, and you're going to move and consolidate onto ClearCase, and so we've made enhancements to ClearCase to allow it to support both distributed as well as mainframe development. That'll take some time to do that move, but in the long run, you're going to have tremendous payback. So it just sort of depends, but anywhere from days onward.
Finally, Hayden, I understand that you have some new announcements coming.
Yep, we sure do. We're sort of timing this in conjunction with the Z10 hardware launch. We have are introducing a set of solutions around this enterprise modernization arena to help accelerate software innovation for System Z as well as for other platforms. Some of the highlights of this release are a new version 7.1 of Rational Business Developer. This is our IDE, Eclipse-based IDE, that helps you use EGL to build multi-platform solutions, including solutions that can deploy on WebSphere on Z, Z Linux, CICS, IMS, ZOS Batch, and so forth, as well as distributed platforms. We're introducing a new version 7.1 of Rational Developer for System Z. This is our premier IDE for COBOL, PL1, and assembler development, as well as it is sort of a Russian doll type product where it has inside of it all of our J2EE, XML, web service, web page tooling. We're also introducing the Rational Transformation Workbench version 3.1. This is around doing this asset modernization, helping you do a better job of managing your software artifacts and not only being able to figure out what you have and do impact analysis, but also, as the name suggests, transforming those assets for greater business value. Things like extracting business rules, helping identify potential services, discovering dead code, and the like. And then the final thing on the product front is a new version of HATS, Host Access Transformation Services 7.1. Some of the new features here are support for creating mobile device interfaces from existing green screen systems, as well as being able to create portlets. So we've always been able to do GUIs and web pages, but now we're doing portlets and mobile device user interfaces. And there are many more features in all these products. Now, in addition to this, we're helping people get started on down this modernization track by providing some what we call starter packs, System Z starter packs. So it's a groupings of a couple of two or three or four products that we think fit nicely together to help customers get started down this path. And then finally, we have some new offerings around helping customers, even before they may have decided exactly where they want to go with this, helping them get started. So we've got a new System Z sandbox offering that lets people experiment using a System Z, using the tools that are destined for use on Z without having to have a dedicated box themselves, as well as some new education offerings that we have to help people understand how to build modern architected systems, even if they're implementing them in COBOL or PL1 or what have you. So we've got some new products and then some new services and capabilities around it to help people get started as quickly as possible.
Well, thanks to Hayden Lindsay for his insights, and thanks to you for joining us for this IBM Innovations podcast on enterprise modernization. Until next time, my name is Paul Gillen.